Welcome, welcome, welcome to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arend.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We're going to start the show today with a little bit of breaking news. Two people are dead and three are injured, and one of those is in critical condition. This all following a workplace shooting in Chester, Pennsylvania. That shooting took place at Delaware County Linen in the 2600 block of West 4th Street there. It happened this morning, and Delaware County District Attorney Jack Stolzheimer said the suspect is an employee who took out his anger by bringing a handgun to work and shooting five of his coworkers. The suspect then was arrested after he fled to nearby Trainer. He is now in custody, and the suspect has not been identified. Again, two people dead, three injured. We will be following this breaking story.
And our thoughts are with everybody down in Chester today. The rest of the show, Cherry, we're going to focus on in-person work versus remote work. This has become a hot topic because Philadelphia Mayor Sherelle Parker has said that all city employees must be back in the office full-time starting July 15th. That's the ultimatum, pending any sort of union action that might postpone or maybe even cancel it out altogether. But it does give us an opportunity to talk about where we are in the return to office continuum, because everything got upended by the pandemic, and sometimes it's hard to keep track of exactly where we are, how many people are working remotely, what have been the effects of those policies. So we're going to tackle all of that today.
Yeah, and if do you work from home?
Yes.
You know, 100% of the time? Are you hybrid? Do you prefer in-person work? What are the benefits to you? You know, what are the downsides? Give us a call. That number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. I put it out there on Facebook. Quite a few people had something to say.
Yeah, we even have a comment from a city worker.
Yeah.
So I'm
excited
to share that with folks in that second segment. So write us, call us. We would love to hear from you on this topic. Third segment today, we believe.
It's going to happen today.
Will be an interview.
It's going to happen.
Will be an interview with Aisha Roscoe about her collection of essays that she edited about HBCUs. You did the interview.
Yes.
We promised the interview does exist. We did have to postpone it from yesterday because we were just rolling with our conversation about ATVs.
Yeah,
and we wanted to give space for that.
Yeah.
So we decided to just postpone it by a day, but we do plan to get to that in the third segment.
And now we're going to jump into the news.
Let's jump into some headlines, and I'll start with something that also happened yesterday here in Philadelphia. I don't know if people caught this, but Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was in town to give a speech at the SEIU convention. That's a major union. He also met with Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. They talked about clean energy, manufacturing, AI, and commerce. And here's the Prime Minister speaking about climate change yesterday after his closed-door meeting with Shapiro.
We've already started another wildfire season in Canada, so I apologize in advance if we give you another summer like we did last summer. I mean, it's funny, not funny, because the reality is this is an unbelievably consequential and stressful time for citizens.
Of course, they also talked about trade. Canada is Pennsylvania's largest trade partner. Pennsylvania exports over $14 billion in goods to our friendly neighbors to the north, and Canada, in turn, sends us just about the same amount in trade. So there is a lot of flow across Lake Erie and back.
Yeah, it made me think about yesterday. Remember when Governor Shapiro was here? You know, it made his trip to Philadelphia very productive because he didn't just announce, you know, Philadelphia, you know, Pennsylvania, the great getaway, you know, and the 250th, but he's also meeting with heads of state. And it shows that, you know, he's the kind of governor that's going to be there, or at least he's trying to show that. And it says, you know, what are you trying to say, Governor Shapiro? Are you trying to make a run to become a national figure here?
Yeah.
You know, it shows he's very serious about bringing heads of state to the Commonwealth and having this kind of conversation. I don't know.
You can't ignore the politics, but it's just one meeting, but you can't ignore the politics because certainly Shapiro's national profile seems to be on the rise. Let's move to another story now based here in Philadelphia, but one that also has national and international implications.
Absolutely. There's a new committee that has been tasked with studying the possibility of reparations for Black Philadelphians. It's called the Philadelphia Reparations Task Force. There are 10 members, and they met for the first time on Tuesday. So how did this task force happen? Well, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, they called on Philly City Council to create this task force last year. Council members Gauthier and Kendra Brooks introduced a resolution. It passed unanimously in June. And here's Councilmember Gauthier at City Hall yesterday. Here's what she had to say.
When we discuss implementing bold solutions that get at the root of problems like poverty and gun violence and gentrification, reparations have to be a part of that conversation.
Yeah, and all members of the task force, they have to be residents of Philadelphia for at least 10 years and have to be descendants of enslaved people or, quote, Black, Negro, or colored Americans since 1865. And mind you, Philadelphia has not made any commitments with regard to reparations. Their job is to simply study it and hopefully issue a report on whether, you know, this is possible here.
And what would it look like?
Yeah, what would it look like? Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, interesting that it's just getting going. You know, just the fact of its existence is interesting in and of itself. Will it lead anywhere? I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? But look, something to follow. I think absolutely.
Absolutely. And there will be a town hall on June 29th.
Okay.
So people can get involved and pay attention to this. But no word when we'll get that report. It's probably going to take a while. That's my prediction.
And look, big change takes a long time. And that certainly applies to Philadelphia's waterways. If you go back about 50 years before the Clean Water Act, wasn't a lot of aquatic life in the Delaware River, Schuylkill River, really no recreation to speak of. But the rivers have gotten cleaner over the last 50 years or so. And really an interesting story in the Inquirer today about what it might take for a river like the Schuylkill River to be truly swimmable or recreatable on a full-time basis. Because right now you can paddle sometimes in some spots, but not all of the time. And the big challenge that this article highlights is the sewer system overflows that happen when there's lots of rain. That creates all this untreated sewage that gets into the river, raises the amount of bacteria. You know, I'm not a scientist. You should read the article yourself. But it was talking about what it would take to get the Schuylkill to a point where maybe in some spots people could boat, could swim, could jet ski. And how lovely would that be? Because we are a city of rivers, and yet sometimes it feels like we aren't because we don't interact with our water in a tactile way all that often. But look, the health of the rivers has improved, and maybe this is a conversation for the next 20, 25 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of proposals on the table, all sorts of, you know, opportunities to get more federal funding to clean up these waterways. And I want to point out, you know, Avi has said on the record that if,
Let me finish.
He has said that if, you know, the officials get it to a point that he would be okay taking a dive in the Schuylkill.
If they said it was safe, I would swim in the Schuylkill. Absolutely.
I would love to swim in the Schuylkill. And my response was, I'm going to look at Avi do it and wait a few weeks to see what the response is I decide to dip my toe in.
I am happy to be the wet guinea pig. I got no problem with that. If they say it's safe, I genuinely think, and the swimming part is funny, but just to get it to a point where you could paddle on it every day.
Yeah.
People, because obviously there's the rowing community.
Yeah, a lot of people.
But beyond that, if it was really like a body of water that people interact, lots of people interacted with it regularly, could explore it, could fish in there. I mean, I know some of that has returned, but there's a ways to go, and it's an interesting.
And it would
story
transform that whole area around it the Schuylkill. It would just make it so.
And it's already transforming because they've added trails and that boardwalk. We're moving in that direction, but there's a long way to go. Wanted to tie up one thing from yesterday because I said I would do
you
this.
You said you would.
Yesterday in the news roundup, we talked about how Bryce Harper helped a young man Prompose to his prom date in New Jersey. And I asked folks if they could pick one celebrity to help them with a promposal or a proposal.
Who would they pick?
Yeah. And a couple of answers here. Heidi says, if there was anyone in the world I would want to convey any request or message, it would be George Clooney. He's still the one.
And George Clooney, very handsome.
Strong
very
choice.
Handsome, yes.
Teresa would like to be serenaded by Michael Bublé, who I believe is from Canada. So that gets us right back to the start of today's news roundup. And then one other person on Instagram, and I didn't get their name, I'm sorry, said Beyonce.
Interesting.
Which is a good one.
And it was interesting because Avi said, should you pick someone who would upstage you?
Right.
Or should you pick somebody who's a little quirky?
I said, pick a comedian. Pick a quirky comedian. They'll deliver the message in a funny, heartfelt way, but not upstage you.
Yeah,
potentially.
Because you want to be make sure that you're the cute one. You know what I mean? You want to make sure you're the cute one.
We had to close the loop on the promposal discussion, and we just have. So now we can move on to our newsmaker, right?
Absolutely. On Monday, Mayor Sherelle Parker announced that she wants to see all city employees back in person full time. Let's hear a bit of that announcement.
In alignment with my administration's goals of creating a more visible and accessible government, I have notified all city workers that they will be transitioning to full-time in-office work effective July 15, 2024.
Now, we are talking about roughly 4,700 employees who have not yet fully returned to work in person. And we want to hear from the union representing some of those office workers. And for that, we have Jennifer Reed, president of Ask Me Local 2186. Jennifer, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thank you. Good day. Thank you for having me.
And so, Jennifer, I got to ask you, how many of those 4,700 workers do you all represent? And what has been their reaction to this new policy announcement?
So it sounds to me, and you use the exact number, 4,700. It sounds like those are all our members.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those are basically all our members. Most of that number are the public sector members or who we represent. Not just my local, but of course, 2187. So there's a lot of people that will be affected. Interestingly enough, the kind of conversations that we have around this has city services been disrupted with this remote work? It's hybrid work. A lot of times people are just working 2 days at home. And then there are positions who have always worked remotely. So it's very interesting. I don't believe that the mayor is asking that those who've always worked, they used to call it mobile work then, mm-hmm. right? Prior to the pandemic. But today, because of the pandemic, it's afforded individuals to have the opportunity to work from home some days, right? It was lifted after the pandemic was the urgency of that lesson. So we want to support our members around this opportunity. And this is just not something that just started because the mayor made this announcement. We've been bargaining and just kind of engaging around flexible work schedules for many years, for decades, I'm told.
And the mayor says that this change that she has announced, the latest one, is not subject to collective bargaining. I take it that your union sees it a different way. If the mayor holds to that position, what is your union prepared to do?
Well, we are in the process of addressing it with some legal actions. We'll say that, okay, mm-hmm. without telling you everything that we're doing, but we are actively and have been speaking about. Once the mayor got into office, we knew that when she was campaigning, that was something that she was planning to do. And so once we heard that on the campaign trail, we began to speak, to work actively to address it. Number one, we wanted to address it with our contract, our contract talks, or our contract negotiations, which are, coming up very soon. And we have a very long list of, so we're not just talking about remote work, we're just talking about a good work home balance for people. So it's not just though, because there's some people who have never had this opportunity, right? So we're talking about alternative work schedules across the board. We've done that with flex time. We're talking about maybe even 4-day work weeks. We're talking about, opportunities, again, obviously hybrid work and remote work for individuals. And so we've been working towards this for many, many years. And again, there are a lot of departments who already have mobile work, and it's not stopped services. In fact, individuals who work in those and those areas and those departments that have that already are implementing hybrid work, mobile work, work from home primarily. Those people, are doing well.
So productivity hasn't changed at all. You're saying
Correct. They've
been just as effective with their hybrid schedules.
See, absolutely. So now you're not hearing the mayor say, oh, well, we're not getting the kind of city services we need. We're not hearing that.
Mm, okay.
But this is what incites our members to great anger.
Yeah.
The fact that you're talking about bringing individuals back into the city so that you can help the businesses in the city.
Yeah.
in downtown area.
And Jennifer, got to ask you, we have about a minute plus left. What will be the impact? Do you think people will want to leave their city job? What do you think the impact if this policy were to be fully implemented?
Absolutely. There are individuals who once they even got a sniff of this happening, or this mandate or decree going out, people have already made moves to leave. There was a woman, we had a town hall, and there were like over 600 individuals that registered to participate. And we sat for 3 hours listening to members across the council about this issue. And one of the members said that she had taken like thousands of dollars in decrease in salary just so she could have an opportunity to work this flexible schedule, so that because of her children's schedules, because of her children's doctor's appointments, those types of things. Then there are elder individuals who want to continue to work and provide good services in their job titles and their job function, who that travel back and forth really inhibits them from really working well. Yep. Right. So this opportunity to have this option has been very good for some people. So we're confused. Yeah. Why would you want to break something that isn't broken? Yeah. try to put yourself fixing something that isn't broken, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. That is Jennifer Reed, president of Ask Me Local 2186. We're talking about this new mandate from the mayor about returning city workers to the office full time. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
And we're going to talk a lot more about this topic more broadly coming up on Studio 2. Stick with us.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Funded by the Knight Foundation, the Chamber announces its Leading the Way Cell and Gene Therapy in Greater Philadelphia report. More at chmbr.biz/CGTPHL.
Welcome back, friends, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. As you know, Mayor Sherrill Parker is ordering city workers back to the office and asking the city's largest private companies to follow suit. She's hoping more people in downtown offices will give the city's economy a little boost. So the battle between remote versus in-office work continues. But what have we learned about remote, hybrid, and in-person work 4 years after the pandemic shook up the workplace? We've asked two experts to join us in studio to talk about what we've learned. Peter Capelli is a professor of management and director of the Wharton School Center for Human Resources. Peter, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you.
And Lonnie Golden is a professor of economics and labor human resources at Penn State Abington. Lonnie, welcome.
Great to be with you.
Listeners, what do you think? Do you think employees should be required to come to the office? What are the pros and cons of working from home? Do you work from home full-time, hybrid schedule? What works for you? And what would make you happy in your job? Call us, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And I actually want to start with another clip from the mayor talking about the rationale behind her return to office order. Here is Mayor Sherrill Parker on Monday.
Employee presence at the workplace allows for more personal and productive interactions. It facilitates communication. It promotes social connections, along with collaboration, innovation, and inclusion.
All right, Peter Capelli, I guess it's a pretty simple question. Is that true?
Well, maybe we could start by broadening that simple question out just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that is, there are always conflicts between what stakeholders want. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's what employers want versus what employees want. When we look back on this stuff, telework, as the government calls it, is not a new thing. It's been around in one way or the other since the 1970s. And in that context, it was individuals who were working remotely while their colleagues were in the office. And the evidence on that is pretty clear. It's bad for you if you're not in the office and your colleagues are in the office.
Bad for your career advancement?
Bad for your career, yeah. You get cut out. You don't know what's going on. It's not too surprising. What's different about the pandemic, of course, is that everybody was home, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a different story altogether. And what do we know about that? Early on, we knew that people liked it. And now, because it's been 4 years of this, it's the new normal for people. You know, there are people who have come into the workforce who've only known this kind of work, right? And do they like it? Yeah, for sure. Although we might want to push a little bit on exactly what about it is it that they like.
Yeah, what do they like about it?
Well, that's a great question. We assume it's that they're not commuting. Department of Transportation, U.S. government, did a little study on this, and they found that actually people are not driving that much less when they're not commuting. They're driving more during the week. I think most people would say it's control over their time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is something that employers could probably do something about, even if they were not having employees work remotely. But to get to your precise question on this, early on in the pandemic, most of the evidence was self-reported. People saying, how are you doing? You working well? Yeah, I'm just as productive as I ever was. The evidence since then, particularly more recent stuff, some of it quite sophisticated. They actually like got employers to send this group of employees home and this group stayed in the office.
Control and groups and all that good
all
stuff.
All that stuff. Yeah. And it shows that there are a lot of negatives for the employers, that productivity is lower, that innovation in particular is lower. We spent this last year doing focus groups with hybrid workers, about 38 of these around the world, actually. And in that context, you can see that while employees like it and they get their own work done, the things that span people and require coordination, those things are falling through the cracks.
Like group projects, those types. Okay, interesting.
And help, right?
And
so
help.
Right now, if I want to help you, this is always attention. I just come to your cubicle and I stick my head over and say, hey, Abby, can you help me with this? And because my face is right there, you say, yes.
I have to do it. Yeah,
you have to do it. Yeah. And you get it right then. However, I interrupt your own work, right? So what's happened with remote work is people are really focused on getting their own work done because there's no reward for helping other people. There wasn't before, but the reason you did it is my face was right there. Now my face is right there and I ping you, but you don't respond.
Yeah, I pretend I didn't see it and I go back to my work, yes.
Yeah. I want to read in this email from Deborah who says, what is the message to workers whose jobs preclude working from home? There are typically blue-collar, lower-wage workers, such as those who collect our garbage and recycling, water main repair workers, paving crews. I contend it's set up a terrible dynamic where managers and other staff work from home while others show up day in and day out. Mm. And so, Lonnie, I want to talk about this issue. Who has the privilege of being hybrid and work from home and have all the perks? And who are the folks who have to go in and slug it out face-to-face, day by day?
Well, there's three different groups. There's those that could be fully remote. There's those that could be never remote. And there's everything in between. So there's certain occupations that you have to be in person, you have to be face-to-face. And what Professor Capelli was talking about, the coordination amongst the staff or the managers with subordinates, whereas there's a clear group about a third actually that never work from home. Never work from home at all. So, but what's interesting in some of the research I've done, when you ask people their preferences or about people like it, there's this clear gap. So it means that when people would be able to work at least part of their job from home, maybe not trash collection, except for some paperwork, there's a lot of gray area in between where folks could do some work from home and be just as productive. And we're not talking about fully remote. There's still going to be coordinating and communication issues with the fellow staff and the support issues that Peter was referring to. But here we're talking about one day a week. We're not talking about the fully remote, right? So if I understand it, in the city, it's only 20% of the employees now are working remotely or hybrid. And just adding on one more day, I don't know if it's going to make that clear of a difference. And like you said, a lot of the jobs are not plausibly convertible to at home anyway. They're not feasibly done at home. It just might be some segments of the work.
And I want to read a quick comment from Amina, who wrote on Facebook, city worker here who works hybrid. It was something folks wanted before COVID. We heard that from the union representative earlier. She says, there are functions and roles that do not interface with the public. I always say my work is felt and not seen. And as a mother with a small child, hybrid works. She says, trust me, my office is extremely effective. So a lot of people feel strongly about this.
We have a caller now on the line. This is Mike on line one, who agrees with Mayor Sherelle Parker's latest order on back to the office work. Mike, you're on Studio 2. What is your comment?
My comment is that I think the mayor is doing the best that she can do to create the conditions for productivity, because government workers in general don't have as much pressure to perform like the private sector does because of profit. So they just go and they do their job. They get paid the same amount. They get promoted regardless. And I think that the people of Philadelphia want to see their government working for them, and Sherelle's trying to make that visible to them by bringing them into office. Not to mention them coming into the city and spending money there is good for city tax and is good for the businesses in the city.
And a lot of people have brought that up, but that first point was something that I haven't heard a lot. And thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah,
that's a fascinating insight. It makes me think, Peter, I know the research is just emerging on our new workplace reality. But do we think we know if there are differences among sectors, say public versus private sector work, in terms of how effective remote work is, or is it just too early to say?
Well, I think we know a lot. And as Lonnie was saying before, there are some jobs where it probably doesn't matter where you're sitting. The U.S. Patent Office, for example, went permanently remote even before the pandemic. They never have to come in. But if I'm an employee, I would be really careful about raising my hand and saying I want to be permanently remote, because if I'm the CFO or the finance guys, they're likely thinking, oh, Peter never has to be in the office. Okay, that's fine. Why is he an employee at all? Let's make him a contractor, right?
You seem more expendable.
You're much more expendable, right? You don't have to be here. Sure, go wherever you want. You're going to be a contractor now. Are you okay with that? I'd be nervous, you know? So if my boss tells me, you know what, Peter, you could just work anywhere, I'm not sure I'd like to hear that. So I wouldn't raise my hand immediately on that one if they tell me you never need to go to the office. Right?
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking about this back to the office policy recently announced by the Parker administration here in Philadelphia. What do you think about the debate? Do you think employees should be required to come into the office 5 days a week? What are the pros and cons of working from home? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We're going to bring into the conversation Neil Makija. And I think I just said his name wrong, but it's Makija, Montgomery County Commissioner, who has a different perspective on remote work than Mayor Parker and has recently tweeted about it. Neil, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much. It's Neil Makija.
I apologize for that. Neil, you sent out this tweet. I want you to talk about how do you think the back to the office policy in Philadelphia will impact Montgomery County, positively or negatively?
Sure. Well, look, let me first just say, I think Mayor Parker has got a tough job, and she's taking a lot of bold stances and leading on a number of fronts, and I respect all the considerations that she's got to make for Philadelphia. So in Montgomery County, when we first got in, we really wanted to take steps to try to attract talent from everywhere. So we actually don't even have a residency requirement, and we hadn't had one in Montgomery County. And, you know, one of the first major policies we implemented was a paid leave policy for parental leave, 12 weeks for all, up to 16 weeks for anyone in the case of medical complications. And there are certain benefits like this that I think the private sector has gotten ahead of the public sector in. And in order for us to really attract the best talent, we've got to be able to offer the flexibility and resources that that people might find if they're applying for jobs in other sectors. So one of those things is the flexibility of hybrid or remote work. And as you had somebody comment earlier who had a young child, it's really important, I think, to give people the flexibility to be able to live their lives, but recognize that we can evaluate performance in many, many ways. And it's not necessarily, you know, do I see you in the cubicle or not? You can actually measure and make sure people are following up in their job and we're ultimately delivering all the services we can. And by being flexible, we're able to attract the kind of people who will knock it out of the park in terms of their performance.
So this is all about the competition for workers. But what is the policy in Montgomery County? Because obviously some jobs must be done in person. Someone mentioned, for instance, picking up garbage and recycling. You can't do that remotely. So is it a department by department decision? Is it a hire by hire decision? Like, how do you guys effectively allow for the space for hybrid work?
Absolutely. So look, some jobs, as you note, absolutely, you got to be in a particular place. For example, if you're a park ranger, you got to be in the park or around the parks. If you're a correctional officer, that's something you can't do remotely. Probation officers, caseworkers, people who are working directly with those who are coming into the county for services. But then there's a whole other set of jobs. For example, if you're a software trainer, web development, graphic designer. I've had great graphic designers who, you know, who live out of state and they produce amazing work product and are, you know, promoted based on their performance and what they produce. And, you know, if you can have a laptop and you can be plugged in through Zoom and other means, you can still build the same rapport and relationships. And I'm not saying 100% remote, by the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes it's a certain number of days a week. It's really the department decides. So the way that we've done it here is, you know, it's dependent on the department and how the manager is overseeing that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your commentary. That was Neil Makija, a Montgomery County commissioner who tweeted basically a link to the Montgomery County Municipal Jobs Board welcoming strong city workers from Philadelphia who are looking for hybrid or virtual options. Thank you for your contribution to this discussion, Neil.
I appreciate it. And thank you so much. And again, you know, I think every county is going to have to make their own decisions on how to handle this. And I, you know, really respect what the mayor is doing. In Monco, you know, we're taking a slightly different approach, you know, everyone's going to have to figure that out.
Thank you.
And let's bring in an email now from Susanna, who says, I'm 51 and feel that work in the office is necessary for new people. And it's really important to have a network of peers to help you learn and grow. However, Susanna says, I'm also a new city employee, and I appreciate that many want the work from home option. I think giving employees the options to work from home maybe one day a week would be a fair balance. Let me bring you back into the conversation, Lonnie Golden. So do we think we know how those like one day a week policies are working right now in the private sector, in the public sector? Do you think we have a handle on whether like that might be the right balance?
We do think that might be the right balance. We understand that there's synergies from being in person, customer service that's facing the public is really important, but is it really every day? And the commissioner from Monco said the magic word, excuse me, of flexibility, because that's really what people want. And I've seen surveys where the four-day work week is very popular, and that's doable, and it interfaces with this remote work. When they're saying they want one day away from the office, what they're really saying is, I'm willing to come in 4 days and do all my work then and bring some work home because of the trade-offs involved with coming in every day of parking, of commuting, of the energy and time it takes for that. There's been some really interesting studies of how people will substitute that reduced commuting time, and most of it, or at least half of it, is filled with work. So convincing employers that that's true is a real problem, right? Even on that one day. But I think that that's really what we're converging toward is this common interest of a four-day work week and a one day at home if you're full-time.
Yeah, and I want to bring in a caller. Amanda is predicting that workers will leave for remote jobs. Amanda, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. I guess my concern is that I think we're in a position right now where about a quarter of the city jobs in Philadelphia, are vacant. I have an alarm going up. Here we go.
We hear you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry about that. So a quarter of the city jobs are currently vacant in Philadelphia, and if the city wants to be able to compete for workers, but I think it's going to have an even harder time if it's not offering remote or flexible work to its workers.
That's a great point, Amanda. Thank you for that comment, and let me steer that to you, Peter Capelli.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about what people's preferences are, but there's a big difference between having a preference and acting on it, say not taking a job or leaving a job that you have, which incurs a lot of risk. So do people act on those preferences in the marketplace at a scale that actually affects employers like the city of Philadelphia?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, so the evidence, historical evidence, but it depends case by case, of course, is that only about 7% of people who say they're going to quit actually quit. And the reason is you got to go someplace for most of us. Somebody's got to offer you a remote job. And, you know, remote jobs are not quite as popular across the country as we would think. So 3/4 of U.S. employers have no remote workers. So say that again, because it surprises people. Only 25% of employers in the U.S. have any remote workers. It's a big city, big company thing for the most part, right? And so unless you think somebody else is going to offer you one of those jobs, you're not going to quit. The commissioner said something interesting about having people, you know, easy to hire people remotely. Well, the downside of that is that remote people also quit much more easily. So they leave very easily, too.
So let me follow up on that, though, because you said not yet. Mm-hmm. But this reality of remote work, hybrid work being more common is still just emerging. And the caller brought up the fact that Philadelphia city government specifically already has a problem filling positions. Would you reevaluate your analysis in light of A, sort of the new post-pandemic reality, and B, Philadelphia's specific employment challenges?
Well, if we look at the national data anyway, remote work is holding kind of steady, but it has been declining. So if you looked in 2022, 17.9 million people were working remotely. A year later, it was 15.9. So it's slowly coming down. Does it matter to the city in their particular context to make it easier to hire people? I would say more it might make it. It probably does a bit. It also makes it maybe easier to retain some people. That's probably true, too. But I guess the question is, what are the other factors? The thing we didn't talk about here, and because I live just a few blocks from here, I can tell you, as you all know, that there are a lot of storefronts that are still vacant, and restaurants in particular don't have lunch business as much anymore because there's not so many people coming in.
And the city of Philadelphia is an unusual employer in the fact that it should care about that in the way that a private company should, might not.
And the mayor's been talking about that too, right? So that matters too. And then related to that is, are we losing anything in terms of performance? If you're an individual contributor, probably not. But, you know, city jobs, I don't think, are disproportionately individual contributors where you're not connecting or working with anybody else. So
and
that's the trade-off.
And let me read this comment. Danielle said on Facebook, I think it's wonderful that the mayor is requiring a return to the office. As a taxpayer, I'm paying millions of dollars for office space that sits empty but is still being air-conditioned, lit, and heated. A good portion of the city workers who are working from home, she says, aren't working. A lot of folks dispute that. And emails aren't being responded to. That's what she says. Now, I want to bring in this caller, Sarah, who is a remote worker. Sarah probably has a perspective. Sarah, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I want to thank you for bringing up this topic because it's a huge topic and complicated. But I just think that if saying, like the mayor said, to come in 5 days a week, that seems to be going backwards because we've learned a lot by trying to do it personally. I save a lot of money not commuting every day, and I get a lot done. I get more done when I work from home, not only my own work, but with my colleagues as well. And I work in Philadelphia, and so there it brings such a great quality of life to people. So it's I don't think we should just throw it away.
And Sarah, quick follow-up question to you. Would you leave your job if you were required to work 5 days a week in the office?
Yes. I mean, like he said, I would wait till I get something else, but I would absolutely be looking until that happens.
It wouldn't be a reckless quit, but it would be eventually a quit.
You would be looking.
That's Sarah. Thank you so much for that perspective, Sarah, and a really important one to fold in. So for the second day in a row, we're just going to bump that Aisha Roscoe segment one more day.
We will get to Aisha Roscoe.
We do have a ton of comments and some calls lined up, and we just want to make sure we give this conversation the time to breathe. So we're going to go to break now after I reintroduce our guests, Peter Capelli from the Wharton School, Lonnie Golden from Penn State Abington. We're talking about the future of work, remote versus hybrid versus in-person. Stick with us on Studio 2. We've got more to come. Thank you.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Funded by the Knight Foundation, the Chamber announces its Leading the Way Cell and Gene Therapy in Greater Philadelphia report. More at chmbr.biz/CGTPHL.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. In person, I guess I should say. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And we are continuing our discussion about Mayor Sherrell Parker's new back to the office policy. We have two experts in our studio with us. We have Peter Capelli, a professor of management and director of the Wharton School Center for Human Resources, and Lonnie Golden, a professor of economics and labor human resources at Penn State Abington. We've had lots of callers and comments on this. And so I want to bring in one more caller, Miguel. He's on the phone. He's talking about he's a maintenance worker who cannot work remote. Miguel, what is your question or comment? You're on Studio 2.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I actually just have 2 points. You know, just like you said, I actually have to work with my hands. Once somebody told me that you get paid for what you know and not what you do. And really, this is the way it feels right now because, you know, throughout the pandemic, I was hands-on, didn't stop working. Other people had the opportunity to do that, but I think it's very unfair for people like us that depend on our hands to actually get, you know, our paycheck. Mm. Now, I think that's very short-sighted. On the other hand, you know, as a maintenance worker, I have been turned out of apartments very often because people who rent from the landlord doesn't allow us to go in because we have to do some noise when we work. I think the mayor can really make a coalition with people who own these properties and do some legislation to, you know, to incentivize the people to come to work and actually make a put something for the landlords because they're actually losing money.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not speaking for them. You know, I'm a maintenance worker, but I see it. You know, and it's kind of it's a little bit resentful just to think that, you know, like we're getting paid for what we do, but we also know.
Yeah.
You know, like if you compare the salary of a president from one of the major universities versus one maintenance guy, it's huge. You know, and we cannot sit in front of a computer and fix a toilet.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great perspective, Miguel. From Miguel. And I think what Miguel was implying is that because people are working from home, it's harder to do maintenance on properties during the day. That was my understanding at
and
least.
Also, it seems to be this unfairness between this, people who work with their hands and have to be somewhere and the folks who get to be at home.
And can I ask a question to you, Lonnie Golden, off of that? I wonder if the resentment from that work divide is still sort of festering and growing and maybe hasn't truly presented itself at its full strength yet, and that maybe 10 or 15 years down the road there will be a real sort of like workplace culture problem because of that divide. Do you think that could still be developing, or do you think people have sort of come to the understanding of this is the new reality and, hey, maybe I'm not a winner in this equation, but I accept?
No, I think you're onto something. I think there's always been disparities in opportunities to get certain perks, and the more that it's viewed as a perk rather than as a way to work better and, like the other caller said, save time from commuting so that they can devote it more toward work. So there's always been these disparities within organizations between different occupations, and it's I do think it's escalating it a bit. But it could be used as a way to try to create some remote opportunities for the folks that don't get direct access to that, in addition to meeting in the middle where those who are fully remote do have to be present for more than they used to be before. So there's ways to meet in the middle, but this has to be coordinated by management and human resources that sees this as an issue to be addressed and to form more cohesion between people who either relate to each other in their jobs or don't.
And we're going to come back to you, Peter, 1 second. An email from Fiona says, I am a 35-year-old IT consultant, and I went fully remote in 2020. At first, it seemed great as a break from flying out every week to cities all over the USA. But now, 3 years in, it is incredibly lonely. There is no airport hustle, no in-the-room client meetings, no lunches with colleagues, no face-to-face interactions with people all day, every day. I miss the energy you needed to hustle every day. And so what are some of the things that people will gain if
coming
this back to work policy, back to office policy, if it works, what will be some of the gains?
Yeah, I just want to say one quick thing about Miguel's point. Mm-hmm, our colleagues at Penn did, I think, smartly. They decided that if you manage people who have to be in the workplace, you have to be in the workplace. Right. So pretty simple norm.
So just to even that out.
To even out
the
just
dynamic.
Out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But back to your point, Cheryl. I think we know a lot about that. And the people who gain a lot from being in the workplace are people who are new coming in. Mm-hmm. And our guess was, at least the places I've been talking to, new people coming in, it takes them about 3 or 4 months longer to be productive now than it did before, because you just can't talk to somebody and ask Alani this question and how do I do this and run to the tech people and get everything done quickly. You don't learn the culture of the organization. You don't meet people. Social isolation, as your caller was suggesting, is a very big deal. One of the things we asked in these focus groups we did is, have you met anybody working remotely that you had a social connection with afterwards? And the answer was no.
Yeah.
Wow. Zero.
You're holding up a zero, Lonnie.
Lonnie's like, nothing.
780 people we talked to. And, 22% of Americans are my age, say they met their spouse at work.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It's a huge—
It's messing up relationships.
It's a social network.
On many levels, yeah.
And this was fascinating. I read something in the New York Times that was looking at government data. I believe it was census survey data. And it said that even among college graduates, workers in their 20s were more likely to be in the office full time than older colleagues. I had assumed, this will be popular among younger people. They're so used to working online. But it seems like a lot of younger people actually crave at least some in-office time because they want exposure to people who can help them and who might be their friends.
And they're Imagine this one, though. So let's say you just graduated here. And you're told you got a job in New York or you got a job in Philadelphia downtown. And they tell you, great news, you can stay in your apartment and work there. Does that sound attractive to anybody? The whole reason you're going to a big city is to be out there. Right?
Not for me in my 20s, and I can see why people might feel that way. Yeah.
And I got to throw in here, Maida writes, I think it could revitalize businesses. Not sure if its impact on services. In the end, I think that there will be a compromise once workers and supervisors figure out an evolving structure. So is there going to be some, it sounds like everybody got to be back into work 5 days a week forever. But when you get in there, will it be more flexible than we're thinking? Will all the deep fears that people have about being back in the office the way we used to be, do you think it'll all kind of level out? Lonnie?
It might all level out. If we had a 4-day work week, at least not necessarily every week, that might settle this demand or preference for the remote work. And it might be just selective or targeted, not to the newer people, but to people that we know and trust and understand can get their work done from home, that know how to stay connected, engage with their fellow employees, with their subordinates or superiors. So it might swing back to somewhere in the middle. I'd be a fan of, as an economist, of offering people carrots and maybe some sticks.
Can I ask you a question based on that? So Eric says, it seems as though the mayor is trying to revive the city on the backs of the workers, but is there any extra compensation? If it were me, I'd pack my lunch. So only less than a minute left, but is there a way just to incentivize the behavior that employers want to see from workers?
Sure.
Extra money, something. Money.
Well, get people back by offering them free lunch and things. You know, it's amazing, even with my very expensive colleagues, a $10 lunch will get anybody to show up for anything.
There's all kinds of things. What about the restaurants?
All kinds of things, though, that you could do to get them to come back.
Yeah. Right?
And I think the idea of winners and losers is important for us to remember here. And, the big winners have been people who have kids and who already know what they're doing. They don't need to be in the office.
Yes.
The losers are other folks. Could we create some compromise and give people more flexibility than we had before? Yeah, we could, but it's going to require some effort from management, and they got to be willing to do it.
Well, we could talk a lot more about this topic based
on
the
number
of comments, so many calls today.
We love the engagement, listeners.
But let me thank everyone who participated, and sorry to the folks we didn't get to. Peter Capelli, Professor of Management and Director of the Center for Human Resources at the Wharton School. Thank you for your time, Peter. Lonnie Golden, Professor of Economics and Labor Human Resources at Penn State Abington. Lonnie, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
And thank you to all the folks who called in.
Obviously, apologies to Aisha Roscoe.
We will get to you, Aisha's story.
It's a great interview, yes. I swear.
But that is it for our show today. Our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Copes. Charlie Kyer is our engineer for the day. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, we will talk to you tomorrow.